So hello and welcome to this week's CV Focus for the ITTHub.net. My name's Matt Eisenegger. We've had a couple of weeks off, actually, and we're getting back into the groove with the podcast now. And what's really become apparent over that this industry is moving so, so quickly, and it's really, even from a media perspective, to sort of keep hold of what's going on out there. So I thought, well, let's have a chat to somebody that really does know what's going on out there. Let's try allay anybody's fears about jumping on the EV world, getting the electric vehicles, electric vans. So joining me today is Chris Chandler from Lex Auto Lease. Chris is the how would you describe yourself, Chris? What's your title?
Well, I've got two hats, really. I'm principal consultant within Lex Auto Lease, but I'm also the SME for alternative fuels and electrification within Lloyd's Motor Finance. So really, I'm principal consultant, but, you know, my big focus is on fleet electrification and sustainability.
So you'll be a really sort of busy boy at the minute, Ben, with everything that's going on in the world, won't you?
Well, interestingly, I've been in sort of sustainable fleets now for nearly 25 years.
Right.
But the last 2 years have been, really people talk about sort of, you know, tipping point and markets going through, sudden change. But this has been building for a long time, and there have been lots of early adopters, there have been early manufacturers, but we're now really getting to that mainstream piece where we're getting volume vehicles. You know, we're really getting some good propositions that can work well now for fleet operators.
It's moving down the chain now, isn't it, a little bit? I think it used to be sort of I think businesses felt they had to do it rather than really having a proper need to do it. And I think that, well, that's completely changed now. But I mean, it's a real journey though, isn't it? You know, when you're moving from diesel, or let's say just more traditional fuel types, to the new world being EV, there's a lot of consideration. And obviously within Lex Auto Lease's business, I suppose you're in a great place because of the impartiality that you've got. So, but let's just really rewind it back to the start. Use me as a bit of a guinea pig. I've got a fleet of 25 vans. I think I want to go down the electric route. What considerations? Give me some sound advice. Talk me through the process.
Okay, so the first thing with commercial vehicles, first and foremost, is what are the type of vehicles you're operating, and are there suitable products in the market for electrification? If you're in the lighter van market, there's quite a lot of product out there now, relatively speaking. If you're in the heavier, more specialist market, then that can be a little bit more challenging. So our first thing is to look at the vehicles that you're actually running, ensure that they're actually the right vehicles for you in the first place. So our commercial vehicle engineers would actually ensure that you're not using certain vehicles for legacy or historic reasons, but they are fit for purpose, what you're doing now. We'd assess things like conversions and equipment on board. And from that, we would decide the most suitable vehicles and fit for purpose vehicles for the activities you're doing. Mm. And at that point, we then look at electric alternatives. And we do that from an absolute perspective. So we'll look at the vehicles and we'll assess whether there are mainstream manufacturers that have those vehicles on the market now, or whether it might be a specialist or niche provider. And then we'll look at the operational ability, the sort of ranges you're doing, the sort of drive cycles you're doing. Will the electric options in the market fit the case? Mm-hmm. And once we've done that, we'll then move into the cost argument, and we'll look at whole life cost of operation, and then we'll build a business case as to electrification. Mm. So we very much start off with the vehicles, their suitability for electrification from a practical perspective, and then we look at the operational needs and then how we can actually make that work. Mm.
What about the sort of infrastructure? I mean, obviously we've spoken about the sort of the vehicle element of it and the sort of advice and everything, but obviously these vehicles are going to be working from either a home base, or they're going to be working from an office or warehouse environment. Obviously, you go down the route of looking at that scenario as well, yeah?
Absolutely. So, you know, what once you've identified what vehicles can work, and we look at the drive cycles, et cetera. So, you know, is it a tight geographic location, or are they doing long distances? It's very different, for instance, if you've got a parcel delivery business that will effectively be doing lots of multi-drops versus, for instance, engineers who might be going somewhere and staying in that location for a long time. So we look at the type of activities that they're carrying out, and then we look at what charging would be required and dwell times. Right. So, for instance, if somebody takes a vehicle home at night, then ideally we'd like to try and get it charged at home overnight so it's got a full charge for the next day. If it's a back-to-depot, then we have to look at what charging is available and potentially at that depot, whether it's own site, whether it's leased site, and how many vehicles and what type of charging you'll need. Typically, if it's overnight, it can be a fast charger, so just, you know, 7.5 kilowatt or something.
I mean, we've spoken about this in depth before on the other podcasts we've done, but I think the one thing that's the missing link really is people making decisions now, particularly, you know, vehicles are vehicles in a roundabout where they're the easy bit. It's the actual property, the premises, that can be the decisions you're making now. You know, we're talking about this road to net zero being 2030. So the decisions you're making now about the acquisition of property, whether you're going to lease, buy, whatever, rent, fundamental now, aren't they? Because you could quite, you know, if you're planning on staying in that business, in that area, or, you know, in the property for 10, 15, 20 years, they're decisions that are going to affect you, you know, your whole buying decision now, aren't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's an investment. It's an infrastructure investment. And, you know, that actually raises another point that we're always very mindful. A lot of the cost of charge points is actually the civils work and the installation work rather than the actual charge point itself.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we'll often do, we'll work with a charge point provider, and we'll not just look at how many electric vehicles the fleet might be wanting to put on this year. We'll look at their you know, future requirements. So we might only be putting in 3 or 4 charge points now, but the recommendation might be to put in the underground cabling, et cetera, for the future requirements for charge points, so that in the future it's literally just an install rather than new trenching, new cabling, you know, et cetera. So it really does, in the first instance, it does require a good piece of planning, because it will make the transition over the following years a lot easier.
Can I ask a question? Because you'll be familiar with this. Are property developers, you know, are they actually integrating charging infrastructure into the buildings now without having a specific, you know, is it becoming almost like a basic specification to the property?
Yes, it is. And on new build, you know, there are regulations requiring now that, you know, charge points are put in for new build. Obviously, there's a lot of existing real estate out there. And I suppose my advice there would be, if you're leasing, to plan early, because there can be time delays with negotiating with landlords and getting, you know, the right access to having charge points installed. So don't sort of think you can think on Friday, let's go electric, and the next week you're going to have all your charge points in. It's not that massively complex, but you've just got to be prepared that there's a bit of a process there if you don't.
It's a whole different approach to acquiring vehicles now, isn't it? As I say, you know, and I've said it time and time again, you know, in the previous generation of vehicle acquisition, you know, you shook the hand and 10, 15, 20 weeks later on, the new fleet of vans arrived and that was it. And it's a completely different process now, isn't it? With a lot more time attached to it.
Yeah, but I think, you know, once you understand your fleet operation and you've looked at your workplace charging and how you're going to grow that, and you have the considerations for home charging and public charging, for instance, once you start getting that in place and you get a handle on that, you know, it's not that different.
Yeah.
In fact, I would argue, and obviously, I'm talking about me personally now, you know, I've got an electric car. I can charge it from home. And the convenience for me of not going to the petrol station all the time and just charging the vehicle on my drive, it's actually way more convenient than having a diesel vehicle. Now, not everybody has the ability to charge a vehicle at home, but, you know, for vans going back to base or when they can be charged at home, it's actually quite convenient because every morning you can have a full tank of electricity, or if you like. And you know, so there are some conveniences to be had with electrification. Where it becomes a challenge is when you've got vehicles carrying a lot of weight and doing high mileage, because obviously payload will affect range, just like it does with diesel.
Suppose there's going to be instances where, and it's, I don't know if you'd really say this now, because obviously the way that the world is moving, but there are going to be instances where diesel is the right solution, isn't it? There's going to be odd occasions, probably few and far between now, where diesel is probably going to be the right solution for a particular task in doing a particular type of route, I suppose.
We are still very much right vehicle for right activity.
Yeah.
And, you know, electric is not going to suit every commercial vehicle now. What we look to do is to provide our customers with the right information and the tools to make that decision, and then go with the right fuel choice. Now, we've obviously got a strong focus on Road to Zero. And so obviously, you know, we are, you know, really focused on trying to get our customers to their zero emission target. But we have to also be practical and realistic with what vehicles are available in the market and also what applications the vehicles are being put to. And, you know, so some of our customers have got really key, important roles that these vehicles carry out. And you can't you can't risk those operational requirements. So, you know, it's very much at the moment about finding out for commercial vehicles where it fits. I think for cars, if I'm brutally honest, I think the only issues now are potentially cost, because we've got vehicles that can travel, you know, really long distances now. But yes, they tend to be slightly at a higher price point. For commercial vehicles, I don't think everything can go electric now, but there's a good chunk that can. And I think my key piece of advice to people who are looking at electrification is, don't look at your whole fleet. You know, right, we need to electrify the whole fleet, otherwise we're not moving. Look at the elements of the fleet that you can electrify now. That will start your infrastructure, that will start your knowledge building, that will start your acceptability to your drivers, and then grow that from the areas that are the easier to do's. And then in time, those ones that might be out of reach at the moment that you might be using traditional fuels for, as battery density increases, as prices come down, will move into that direction, and there will be solutions for those. But don't use it as an excuse for doing nothing.
No, it's really poignant what you're saying there. And I'll tell you for why. Last year, when we were down at the ITT hub at Farnborough last summer, I spent a little bit of time talking to the visitors, just interested in where they were on the journey. And it was quite obvious that a lot of the visitors were using the event as almost like I had some great speakers and conferences and everything else going on it. But when you were just talking to people on the event floor, if you will, you could tell that they were using it as almost like as a classroom, as, you know, where they knew their knowledge, let's say, across the board was, like, being polite, was very varied, you know, from people that were really on it to people that were just small fleet operators that had been tasked by their MD to go out and find out what they needed to do. So what you're saying is absolutely sort of on the money, in the fact that, hang on, it might not be right for me, but I need to get the knowledge there so I can make an informed decision about what's right for us as a business. And I suppose using your business as an example, Lex Autolease, you've got the impartiality, haven't you? You know, you can steer people into the right vehicle that's right for them by brand, you know, so you're not tied to a particular brand. You'll give them what is the best solution at the, you know, because there's various price points along the way, offering the best value for money with the best solution with the best vehicle for them. It's you sort of sit sort of centre of it all, don't you, really, I suppose?
Absolutely. And, you know, within the business, but really specifically within the consultancy team, and, you know, I go out and with my colleagues in consultancy, and we advise our customers, you know, on their path to zero. And we look at how they can do it and how quickly they can do it. And it's exactly that. It's about picking the right vehicles, full stop. It's not this brand or that brand. You know, many of our customers will have a mix of brands now on commercial vehicles. And, you know, the interesting thing is some brands that fleets might not have looked at before, and this is true in cars and commercial vehicles, are suddenly actually popping up as being, very relevant for their fleet operations. Some of these manufacturers are niche or new manufacturers who just do electric, and some of them are manufacturers who have been in the market for a while, but they've taken the decision to focus on electric. So, you know, it's a really dynamic market at the moment, and it's important to look at, you know, all the various products out there. And what we tend to do, we'll look at the vehicles individually to find the right vehicle for the right role. But then what we'll do, we'll look at the fleet collectively. So what I mean by that is we may have a customer who's got cars, light commercial vehicles, and some specialist vehicles. Now, the specialist vehicles, there might be a price premium to going electric. But what we'll do, or for instance, there might be a cost to building a recharging infrastructure at depots. What we'll do, we'll look at maybe the cost savings on the electric cars and the cost savings on the lighter commercial vehicles or the more standard commercial vehicles. And then we'll build the business case by saying, even though some of these heavier or slightly more complex converted vehicles, they might have a price premium, but if we wrap that up into the whole transition to electrification, we can offset the charging infrastructure and these vehicles that don't necessarily make the economic sense by offsetting with cost savings from elsewhere for going to electric. Overall, you've got a cost saving or a break even in going electric. So it really is, we're almost deconstructing the fleet into elements and then reconstructing it with the benefits of electrification where it fits.
So let's just talk about, obviously you're out there to speak to these people every day. What sort of issues are you coming across? You know, because there's a little bit of, you know, uncertain. You know, we don't go know too much about residual value, but it's a consideration for purchase. But what sort of reluctance do people have? What issues do they see as being a potential issue that's not really an issue at all? And I suppose where you as a business can come in and remove that element of risk to it, I suppose.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned residual values. Residual values are, central to lease companies, because what we're effectively doing when we set up a lease, we're looking at the purchase cost of the vehicle. We're looking at the running costs of the vehicle over a period, 3-5 years. And then we're looking at what we'll get when we sell it at the end of the period. Mm.
So that risk lies with you then. So there's no consideration, no worry whatsoever for an operator doing that, is it, if they're going down the leasing route with you as a business?
Exactly. So, for us, the trick is to try and get the residual value in the future correct. But effectively, we're taking that risk. So, the arguments of maintenance cost and risk, if you own the vehicles yourself, absolutely they sit with you. If you lease, if you like, it's the leasing company's problem. So what you need to look at as a fleet operator pretty much is the whole life cost of the vehicle, which is the rental with your effectively your fuel costs on top of that. Because the other thing is, electric vehicles do tend to have a price premium still at the moment. The feeling is for cars and vans will be a bit behind this. 2025, 2026 will be a kind of a parity period for cost between the technologies, and people like Bloomberg and other people have done sort of research into that. But at the moment, there is a bit of a price premium. So, you know, some of the benefits of leasing are you remove some of those risks. You're only looking at what the rental costs will be each month. But also that higher cost is amortized into the lease over the period of time. So you might be paying a slightly higher rental each month than you would for a diesel, for instance. But that cost premium for the vehicle comes in every month. Mm. And every month you're getting the cost saving from reduced fuel costs, etc. So from month one, you can be getting a cost saving rather than if you've actually bought the vehicle and you've got a higher outlay at the beginning. You know, we're smoothing that, but also we're giving you predictability of cost as well, so that you know that your van is going to cost you X pounds per month from month one to month 48, for instance. So it takes some of the risk and allows easier whole life cost analysis to see whether the EV is going to work for you, because you're not, as an operator, having to you know calculate what you think your RV and your maintenance costs are going to be.
Give us, I mean, without naming anybody or without naming any operators, are there a couple of some examples of where an operator has maybe been quite against it and you've actually gone in and persuaded him and they're enjoying the benefit of it now? Is there anything that sort of sticks in your mind that's a bit of a yarn to tell?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say where one's been resistant and we've turned it around. I think I'd probably put a slightly more positive spin on that, in the and this is a fairly old one, and I'll use a fairly old one because it's about 5 years ago. I'll use a fairly old one just because it's a
fairly old example. Fairly old 5 years ago. It's madness, isn't it?
and you know, this is one, and I can say because it's you know, it's been publicised, and you know, the customer actually won some industry awards for it. But we went into one customer at Portsmouth Naval Base where that they had just over 100 commercial vehicles operating in a fairly tight geographic location. They knew that electric vehicles would work for some of them, but they were going to trial, you know, one or two vehicles. But we went in and we put temporary telematics on the part of the fleet that first analysis that I said, where you look at, is there an electric vehicle that can do the job? We came up with 60 vehicles that we thought could be replaced with electric. We put telematics on, and we demonstrated that 48 vehicles could go electric immediately. And we proved that with the data. We looked at things like dwell times and where the vehicles were parked up and where, so that we could put their charging infrastructure exactly where it was needed, so that the drivers are still parking the vehicles up at the same place at night. We're not getting them to change their behaviour, i.e. moving all the vehicles somewhere else, but we're just asking them to change the behaviour of when you park it up, just plug it in, rather than once a week going to the petrol station and getting diesel for it. And the interesting thing was, where we already built that case on hard information, the customer, instead of saying, okay, we'll trial one or two vehicles, said, okay, we'll have 48 vehicles that are electric in one hit. And we took away those areas of concern, risk, will it work, etc. And you know, that was a really good example. I mean, we have other examples where we've got fleets and businesses have said, look, you know, we really want to push the boundaries. We don't just want to do an organic growth of if drivers want it or a few little trials. We're going to really push and see what can be done if we push hard. And, you know, one of our customers has done that extremely well. Again, it's been fairly widely publicised, so I don't think I'm breaking any things here. But, you know, Mighty now have over 2,000 pure electric vehicles on their fleet. And that's been really challenging targets, but they've wanted to do it. They've wanted to make that sustainability statement. They've wanted to lead on this. You know, it hasn't been without problems, and it hasn't been without, you know, strong leadership within that business to make it happen. But it shows what can be done if you really push and you have a desire to achieve it.
It's always been, or the perception has always been, that it's been for the bigger fleet operators. And I think as we're getting further into this, particularly with the introduction of local low emission zones, that, you know, your job in plumber, your job in plaster, your job in decorator will automatically be forced down this just to avoid any additional charges on the business. You know, so it is going to go right down to the sort of small business as well as the big operators. Well, it's going to be obviously for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the smaller business, there can also be a much greater local visibility. And what I mean by that is, if you're a small local business that might be running, you know, a handful of vehicles, those vehicles can be very obvious in the local community. And to have sustainable transport and to have vehicles that are zero tailpipe emission, especially in cities, etc., can actually be a very strong PR message as well, that you care about the community you're serving. So you know, you do have that PR piece and the CSR piece, but you also have, as you say, potentially greater benefits of better city centre access and reduced costs where ultra-low emission zones or in London congestion charging is in place. So even for small businesses, you know, it's something really worth looking at. Yeah. Because there are numerous benefits now. And the public awareness of sustainability has really shot up, even just in the last couple of years, with things like COP and, you know, Extinction Rebellion. All these things that are in the media's eye are filtering now through into, you know, Joe Public's mindset now. And sustainability's got a much stronger focus. And that's really what we need, because it's not just about electric vehicles. It's sort of hearts and minds. It's people wanting to change and wanting to make a difference, which, you know, it's really helping.
Yeah. Let's just, I want to look at the sort of future. Now, we keep hearing about sort of, is the infrastructure there to support it? Let's just sort of go down the road. Where do you think we'll be in another 5 years' time? And where do you think we'll really be in another 5 years' time? And obviously, charging infrastructure, motorway infrastructure, and all these other things we keep hearing are not moving quick enough. Is the industry overtaking, I suppose, the supply of energy, I suppose?
I've got to tell you, I'm definitely a glass half full person in this. And, you know, I drive an electric car. I live on the South Coast. I have friends, my office, my friends up north, my office up north. You know, I tend to do, when I do a journey, it tends to be a long journey. Even if I go back to just 2 years ago, where I was sort of hunting for ultra rapid chargers to charge my vehicle. Just in the last 24 months, I don't hunt anymore, because there are plenty now on the motorway and main road network. Now, I've got to say that they started turning up, and I was turning up at places, you know, like rugby services, where you've got 24 ultra rapid chargers. And the first time I used that service station just after it opened, there was probably six or seven vehicles there.
Right.
Now already you'll turn up and you know, instead of there being more spaces than vehicles, now there are more vehicles than spaces.
Yeah.
I still haven't had an issue where I've had to queue yet. But I think it's really difficult with the pace of change, because is it going to be the vehicles quicker pulling the infrastructure or the infrastructure pulling the vehicles? But I think from my perspective, the infrastructure has grown really well at speed. It really encourages me to see the motorway network increasing, as well as now we've got charging hubs and charging stations coming online. So what I mean by that is basically what we would see as a petrol station, but with rows and rows of high-powered chargers. And I think there's some real momentum growing and some real ambition, and we're seeing investment going into these sites. So I personally think it's one of those things. The demand will be there, so people will build, and it will. Will there be areas that will be slightly harder to do? You know, where you've got people without off-street charging who will be reliant on public network charging. I'm sure we're going to have pockets of the country where it's underserved and it's difficult for some people. I think we'll have others where it won't be an issue. It's always trying to work out exactly where that demand is and putting the right charging systems in place there. But I'm pretty hopeful, and the motorway and A roads with the rapid and ultra rapid chargers are growing apace, and I think that's a large part of the solution.
Last question, because believe it or not, we've done nearly half an hour. We've just done over half an hour. Okay. Let's look at where we're going to be in tech. No, let's look beyond 2030. Let's look at 10 years down the line. Obviously, you'll have, I dare say, some quite high level statistics of, you know, percentage of electric vehicles going forward. I mean, without sort of betraying any sort of company confidences, where do you think we're going to be? How big is the market going to be in 10 years, and how many vehicles are going to be out there, do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, we're looking at a position where in 8 years' time, we still don't have the definition yet, but in 8 years' time, all new vehicles are going to be electrified with a significant electric range. So that's either going to be pure electric, or it's going to be pure electric and plug-in hybrids, I would guess. Mm-hmm. That's the logical assumption. But whatever way we look at it, if all the new vehicles have to be predominantly electrified by then, the manufacturers are going to have to build up to that. They're not just going to turn a switch and go from diesel and petrol to zero emission electric in 8 years' time. So, you know, we already know that there's going to be a massive growth to hit that target. We're listening to the manufacturers who are talking about bringing more and more electric vehicles to market. This year, I read in the press and have seen a couple of reports that say there's effectively going to be a new pure electric vehicle coming out effectively every week this year. There's over 50 new models coming out this year. And I think, you know, the pace is really growing. So as we get to 2030, I think the question is not going to be so much for the fleet industry how much of our fleets is electrified. I think the focus is going to start shifting to the secondhand market and saying how much is the UK car park electric? Because fleets operate at the newer end of the market. You know, we're typically replacing vehicles on a 2 to 5 year basis. So I think for the fleet market, I think we're going to be very heavily electrified. And our target as Lex Auto Lease is to have all our customers' vehicles electric by 2030. Now, there might be some specialist vehicles in some areas where we can't do that. And we might, you know, there might be some hard elements there. But overall, we're fairly confident that we can get to that position given the pace of change.
Fascinating, isn't it? I know, but I mean, I've said it, I'll sound like a stuck record when I say this, but I mean, I've been in the sort of commercial media for nearly approaching 20 years, and there's been more happen. I'm going to say even the last five, even it's not, it's probably in the last 2.5 years that's probably happened in the previous 100 years of the industry. And it's not slowing down. And as you say, a big, big headline number there, you know, one vehicle a week launched, new vehicle, electric, you know, providing EV tech, you know, with EV technology, is just, it's absolutely incredible. And as I say, we're only really at the start of it, aren't we?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember saying, and I sometimes, you know, as I've been doing sustainability in transport now for nearly 25 years, and I sometimes go back to some of the old stuff that I did just to see, you know, whether I was right or wrong. And a comment that I made a good few years ago now was electrification was going to have as bigger impact on UK automotive market as removing the man with the red flag. Because when you first had an automobile, you had to have somebody in front waving a red flag to warn people that a vehicle was coming. And I genuinely think it's that much of a seismic change because it's more than just the vehicle. It's sustainable energy generation. I was talking to somebody recently who was talking about, but you know, electric vehicles, if it's connected to your house, what if you're in a position where you haven't got enough range in your vehicle to do a trip because, you know, there's a natural disaster or something and you can't charge the vehicle? I said, well, actually, in parts of America now where they're having, you know, forest fires and they're having natural disasters and there are power outages, it's actually the other way around. People are saying, what an amazing benefit of having an electric vehicle because I can run my house essentials like fridge, freezers and cookers and stuff off my car battery. So you actually look at it and what people initially think is an issue actually starts yielding all sorts of other benefits like grid balancing, like emergency electricity supply in case of a disaster. And we've just got to change our mindset to understand that this is actually bringing us as many or if not more benefits than just stick a fossil fuel in a vehicle and run it until you go to the next petrol station.
It's a complete lifestyle change, isn't it? It's a complete lifestyle change, both personal life with, you know, your own personal transport and obviously the commercial vehicle side of it.
Yeah, and the greening of the grid is happening at such a pace that, you know, we really are making a significant impact and will continue to.
Because that's the trick, and it's got to be sustainable, hasn't it? We've got to have a sustainable energy source. You know, it's okay having the electric cars, but if we're using, you know, fossil fuels to but as you say, it's moving at such a pace that this energy is going to be sort of sustainable and who knows, maybe a little bit cheaper in the future. I doubt that though. Chris, I say we've done, well, nearly 40 minutes. So listen, thanks very much for your time. Great speaking to you. I'm sure the listeners will be sort of, well, hanging on every word you said there because it's great sound advice. You know, it's very, very practical, very straightforward. And you know, again, anybody that has got any fears about moving towards electric, you know, you've probably just myth busted those and blown, you know, laid any fears that they may have. That's brilliant.
Well, let's hope so, because I think it's, you know, it's a very exciting future. There will be concerns and fears. There always is of change and the unknown. But what we're trying to do is take those unknowns and flip them into knowns so that people can go into this with their eyes open. It's not problem free, you know, your infrastructure, as you said, it's a different way of looking at things. But, you know, we want to help customers and we really want it to be an eyes wide open. And that's really what, you know, what we're here for, because I think with the right advice, the right insights and the right knowledge, you know, it's an exciting new stage in fleet.
Brilliant. And as I say, it's here to stay in it. Very, very wise words. Excellent. Chris, thanks so much for your time. And I dare say I will see you at the ITT Hub in not too many weeks' time. I think we're about seven, 8 weeks out. So it's going to be here quicker than we know it. Chris, thanks very much, mate.
Thank you. Looking forward to it too. Thanks, Matt.